living life as a gringo. Where you question where you fit in every time you mingle. They say you do this with not enough that. My rapping is really bad. This life as a gringo.
Yes, welcome to another episode of Life as a Gringo. I am Dramos, of course. And today is an exciting day as we continue on celebrating Latinx Heritage Month. And as I mentioned in my episode last week, every Thursday will be primarily focused on celebrating or having a discussion that directly affects our culture. First and foremost, before I get into anything, if you hear a little bell in the background, maybe some noise in the background, I've got my little puppy in here because while I was recording my episode that dropped on Tuesday, I had him in his little crate, you know what I'm saying, nice and comfortable with little puppy music playing in the background to relax him. And when I came downstairs, I discovered that that this little guy ripped up his entire bed and there was just stuffing everywhere. And I mean everywhere. So now to avoid having to go through this crazy cleanup, he's now going to be sitting in the room with me. So if you hear a little background noise, just ignore that. That is my little pup. But moving on to what we are discussing in today's episode. So fair warning, this one might rub some people the wrong way, but fuck it. It's a podcast. We can talk about whatever we want, honestly. And always respectfully, of course, but I never want to be afraid to tackle certain subjects. So this topic that we are covering in today's show is going to be kind of one of the darker aspects of our community. And I think it's important to call it out, right? I think it's important to not only sit here and, you know, look at our culture for all its beauty and just incredibleness, but at the same time, in order for us to correct some of the mistakes of our previous generations, we got to call out some of the bullshit. And this is a part of it. So our topic for today will be focusing on overvaluing whiteness, how our community has historically overvalued whiteness and chased a proximity to whiteness. And I have an incredible, incredible interview that we're going to be playing in full on today's show with an amazing author. She has a book out right now. It's called For Brown Girls with Sharp Edges and Tender Hearts. Prisca Dorcas Mojica Rodriguez will be joining me in just a little bit on the podcast. And we're going to dive into a few things. We'll touch on my topic from last Thursday where I talk about Hispanic versus Latinx. I'll get her take on all of that and kind of we'll dive a little bit more into some of the history and meaning behind Latinx and why people are wanting to use that. I'll get her take on a hot topic that happened from the VMAs a couple weeks back. And then, of course, we'll dive into a bunch of things from her book. Now, before we hop into the interview with Prisca, let's do a quick little kind of deep dive into one of the main kind of terminologies we tend to hear in this discussion. And she mentions it in our interview. So I kind of wanted to clear up and give the definition for anybody that might not be familiar. So, of course, as we do in all our deep dives, we'll do it in a segment we call For the People in the Back.
Say it loud for the people in the back.
All right, so one of the most commonly kind of used phrases when it comes to this whole idea of like the glorification of whiteness by Latin culture, and we usually hear it referred to as mejorar la raza, and that's a common phrase that's used in Latin American countries, and I'm actually reading a Huffington Post article about it, and they describe it as meaning to improve the race, which is the literal interpretation of that. And they say that it implies that you should marry or have children with a whiter person so you'll have better looking kids. And I want to focus on that last part, that we as a culture historically have trained ourselves that lighter skinned children are better looking. And that is this obsession with whiteness that I'm talking about and this overvaluing of whiteness that I'm talking about. And listen, I say that as somebody who's very much so a light-skinned Latino, but that doesn't mean that just because something favors me that I can't call it out and say it is toxic, toxic behavior. And it's a behavior that then allows us to sort of continue to allow the narrative to happen in society where our stories get buried to the bottom and the white man's story always gets raised to the top. And I'll even use a quick example of this, and I want to preface it by saying this is a terrible story regardless, but one of the big stories in the news this last week has been the girl that disappeared and then her body was eventually found, Gabby Petito, who it's suspected that her fiance might have killed her on the trip. And this has been something that's captivated America, right? We've seen the story all over the news. But then I saw this Daily Beast article, and they posted on Instagram saying, in the same area that Gabby Petito disappeared, 710 indigenous people, mostly girls, disappeared between the years of 2011 and 2020, but their stories did not lead news cycles. And again, this isn't taking away from the horrendousness of Gabby's story, but just to shine a light on the fact that for whatever reason, and obviously in this case, it really does feel like because she is a blonde-haired white girl, her story is making national headlines. Everybody is invested in it. Yet, like they said, this is nothing new for indigenous people, mostly women. Their story is just buried somewhere, if at all covered. And I just use that as a current example because I feel like it kind of doubles down on what we're talking about. But this whole idea of mejorar la raza, I mean, it really is like the work of our oppressors, right? Who basically told us the closer we can get to looking white or assimilating into white culture, the better off we'll be in our lives. And that leads us to not wanting to celebrate our own culture, but actually kind of forget it so that we can blend in more and have more opportunities and have the opportunities that come along with looking white or having European characteristics. And again, this isn't to shame anybody. It's not to guilt anybody. You know, like I said, myself personally, I am a very light-skinned Latino, you know what I mean? But I think it's important to have these sort of tough conversations because in order for us to grow as a culture and truly evolve, you know, we have to leave some of the bullshit that we've been taught behind. But I want to make sure I set the tone so you're kind of aware of like the basis of a lot of the conversation that I have with Prisca, where a lot of it derives from. But with that said, let's get into it, our Mi Gente segment of the show. Mi Gente. My guest, she is the founder of Latina Rebels. She is also the author of the new book for brown girls with sharp edges and tender hearts, Prisca Dorcas Mojica Rodriguez. How you feeling? Did
amazing.
I get that right?
No, yeah, you get it all right. Thank you.
Okay, good. That's a lot, but I love that you're unapologetically not trimming that down for anybody, I have to say, just to get things started.
Yeah, it's all on purpose.
Right, which I appreciate. So, I mean, listen, I want to talk about the book because I feel like I've been seeing it pop up everywhere, even in my own personal life with my girlfriend. And she's so excited that when she found out I was interviewing you. But before we dive into that, I want to kind of get your take on a few current events that I kind of feel like might touch on certain themes that you also talk about in the book.
I'm down.
All right, cool. So, I mean, let's start out with the obvious. I mean, you know, this last week we kicked off Hispanic Heritage Month or Latinx Heritage Month, depending on what you're kind of subscribing to. Obviously, there is a bit of a debate that happens when it comes to the terminology. I'm just curious overall, I mean, for starters, what are your thoughts on like the term Hispanic versus Latino and Latinx and all that's included in that?
I've always hated Hispanic. Mm. I've always been Hispanic. Like, right. I've always fallen in that category, but sure. I have always hated it. I was raised in Miami, which is like mostly Latinx city.
Sure.
And nobody called themselves Hispanic. You were Colombiano, Nicaragüense, Cuban. Nobody was like, I'm Hispanic. Like, that's a very, I feel like that centers white people a lot. Like, it's just easier to put us all there.
Right. Well, I mean, that's like the argument. It's like the name that was given to us by our oppressors almost, you know?
Yeah. I like Latinx though, a lot.
Okay, so you do like that. That is kind of like also the thing where people are just like, oh, these damn millennials are trying to like change things now. So, I mean, you are okay with that?
Yeah, I think it's... Okay. Can I curse?
Yeah, do your thing.
Okay. I think it's bullshit that people are putting that on millennials.
Right.
Because I started using the at sign, the arroba, probably in 2012. And then 2014, I went to El Salvador and I met a bunch of trans and feminist activists.
Sure.
And they're the ones who were like, we don't like the arroba because in the arroba, the O dominates the A still.
Mm.
Like that visually, we don't like. Like,
sure.
We still are prioritizing the O, the gendered, the male O. Mm-hmm. And as soon as they said it, I felt like that emoji with the the
your head exploding.
Yeah. I was just sitting there like, ah, yes.
Yeah. Right.
And
right.
It immediately hit. Like, I didn't learn the Ekis or the E in academia. I learned it by trans and feminist activists in El Salvador who were using the E or the Ekis.
Right.
So I was like, the argument that this is an academic thing, that this is a U.S. thing, it has nothing to do with
right. I agree 100%, and I think it's obvious that, like, in a male dominated world historically, that there would be so much pushback to this. But I think people are failing to realize we're trying to kind of correct some of the mistakes of our culture's past, unfortunately, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's kind of another kind of controversial thing. And I use air quotes with that. But this was last week. We saw the MTV VMAs, and their award for Best Latin Song was won by Billie Eilish, who is obviously a white woman. And then was her song with Rosalía, who is of Spanish descent. Yeah, she's from Spain. Yeah. And there was a lot of backlash on the Internet about two people who are essentially not Latin winning the Latin Award. So I'm curious now your take when you hear that.
Oh, it's so predictably it, though. I mean, I feel like we Latinx primed this situation.
Sure.
Go to Telemundo, Univision. Who are our anchors? They're mostly blonde.
Right.
Or they dye their hair blonde.
right.
Light skin. Like, even Sofia Vergara. Like, she was a hit. We knew her in our community. She was in telenovelas. Blonde bombshell. She came to the U.S. to become more palatable to what Americans think is Latinas. They made her a brunette,
right?
But we primed this. We have been taught to overvalue whiteness to such an extent that we gave white people the permission to then turn around and give this award to some white people.
Right. I mean, it's definitely tone deaf. It's obvious that there weren't probably any brown people in the room when this was being decided. But I do have to say, I kind of feel like there is this weird gray area, though, for people from Spain, right, who speak Spanish, and especially when you're talking about artists who are making music in their native tongue, which is Spanish, they're going to end up kind of crossing paths with Latin America, you know, and the diaspora, obviously. So, I mean, do you kind of feel like they should be kind of kept out of this conversation, though, with that in mind?
Yeah, they're European. No, stay in the white. Like, you might speak Spanish,
right?
That doesn't like, that doesn't give you entrance. That's not it. You're still a white person. Like, I don't understand.
I mean, that definitely is true. But I think what I'm getting at, there is a bit of a complicated history, especially if you're talking about like Puerto Rico, right, where you have I'm Puerto Rican, so my background would be inevitably part Spain and also indigenous with Taino Indians and whatever else is in there, with whether it's African blood and everything else, but kind of a mix. But a part of our culture is that of Spain, of European. So I guess it's kind of confusing at times where we all sort of fit in as well.
Sorry, that was my doorbell.
But, I didn't hear it. You're good.
Okay, good. I think it's a different conversation when you're a colonized person who happens to have colonizer in you versus full-fledged colonizer.
Right.
Like, okay, there's just a difference.
And
we have to distinguish, because they made that distinction for us and against us time and time and time and time again. If we insist on this script that you have given us, which has then scripted the ways that we move in the world, the ways that we, our proximity to like wealth and generational wealth, our proximity to opportunities, our ability to get jobs, because people don't want to hire someone with a Spanish accent. Sure. They want to hire someone with a European accent. That's sexy.
Right.
So
that's when intelligent, they have created, right? That comes across as intelligent rather than like subservient.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So when they've created these ways to lock us out, the least we can do is not let them into our spaces, because they made us create our own spaces. They isolated us and forced us to create community with each other.
All right. We got more with Prisca. But first, let's take a quick break and then we'll be right back. All right. We are back. And let's kind of get into the book a little bit. You talk about kind of having to do your own research to kind of get in touch with your culture and kind of finding a lot of these books that weren't readily available to us growing up. So, I mean, let's talk about first kind of the inspiration that you had that to take that journey into really diving into your culture and your history?
Yeah, I was the person who my parents didn't like me to do anything that wasn't Christian related. Even like music, I wasn't allowed, like I called anything that wasn't Christian is called secular music. And still to this day, like I'll see, I'll say like, oh, that's secular music. And people who didn't grow up in church will look at me like, what?
Right.
It's hip hop, bitch. Like, what are you even talking about?
right.
But like only when you grow up in that context, do you understand this, that it's just Christian or secular, of God, of the devil.
right. And there's no in between. Yeah.
No. And books too. My parents, like, I loved reading and they would just buy me Christian books all the time. I read the Bible like 9 times before I was like 11. Like,
wow.
I was committed.
You're in it.
Yeah. So I was insulated and I went to undergrad. My undergrad, my major was English literature. So of course I read Chess the Canon, Shakespeare, Milton, those folks. So yeah. I wasn't like edified in any of the ways that I think college should be. Mm-hmm. And then I got to grad school and I was doing a master's of divinity, so theology. Mm-hmm. And it's a really progressive program. Like I didn't go to a seminary in like Texas because it's a very different story when you're going to like a very liberal college that's doing a seminary. They're going to do it seminary with a twist for sure. Like where you can't write a paper where God is a he. Unless you explain why you made God a he, like you have to get not just like because the Bible said so, because there's arguments against that if you're talking to biblical scholars.
Sure.
So when I started getting all this counter narrative to everything I understood about the world, I was like blown away. I mean, class was constantly me being shocked that people knew things about like colorism. I remember hearing the concept of colorism.
Right.
I don't even remember anything that the lecture was about because I was on my laptop and I went and Googled colorism and was like, because they just dropped it. They didn't even like engage it like a thoughtful. It wasn't like the class was about colorism. It was almost like, and this explains this because of colorism. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
Google.
Right.
Oh my gosh. That explains everything.
Sure.
And I was having those epiphanies daily. Daily. And so I got to this point halfway through my program where I just was like, why doesn't my mom know any of this? Because I know that she wouldn't have intentionally not taught me this. It's because this wasn't available to her because she didn't get to go to a Vanderbilt University for her master's. Like she didn't even graduate college.
Right.
So why? Why is that? That feels like that's the problem.
Right.
Not the fact that these isms exist, but the fact that we have locked away all the tools for people to understand these isms from the people who are most impacted by it.
Right. Well, it's almost it's historically our history has been either like rebuffed, changed or completely like erased or tried to be kept from us. You know, even like I was doing a podcast last week and just kind of reading about some of like the inventions that were done by Hispanic people or Latin people, you know, for it blows your mind. And it's just like, how is this not something that is celebrated in school the same way Thomas Edison is celebrated for the light bulb, you know?
Exactly.
And you start to learn about different things about like the census and how we were all labeled as Mexican at one point in this country, you know, and you're like, oh, that makes perfect sense why Mexican was a racial slur that I heard growing up amongst white people that I went to high school with, you know? And it's just so many things that, like you're saying, your mind just begins to get blown. You're like, wow, so much of our world is based upon this history that's been kept from us or it's been kind of changed, you know? It's just really fascinating.
And if we had access to it, our own self-perception would be drastically different. And I think that is the strategy. Block the access so that they stay busy and unaware. Right. And I was like, no, let's write a book where we just like give it to them all.
Which I love because that is, I think, like the basis of why our culture has so much internal fighting, so much sort of struggle. You know what I mean? Like internal racism amongst each other. And like we have our own elitist classism system that happens within our own culture. And, and I think it's true what you say. It's by design. Like that's the work of our oppressors to kind of keep us fighting amongst one another because the reality is, if you look at the census, once again, we are quickly becoming the majority in this country. And that is very scary for a lot of people. So the only way to kind of not give us that power is to suppress us in different ways like the vote, but also not allow us to teach the proper history of this world and our contributions to this world, you know, because that would only just empower us.
Yeah. And it's a strategy to keep us separated, like keep us overvaluing whiteness. And the ones of us who aren't Black,
right,
the closer we can approximate ourselves and pretend we're just one of them, they're willing to embrace us.
Right.
So
right.
It's like, no, like you're all that's doing is like we have this critical mass of us and it's breaking us up. Sure. And then making all the things that we could change harder to do.
Right, right. Absolutely. And I want to get more into some of the things in the book. But one thing that struck me that you said was talking about your parents, like, why didn't they teach you and why didn't they know about this? I think also for a lot of people who are like first and second generation, our parents kind of just wanted to be able to assimilate as quickly as possible to get a better lifestyle for their family. You know, like I've asked my dad this before recently, you know, being older, but like, he celebrated all the traditions of Puerto Rico when he was growing up. He was born and raised there. But we never celebrated as a kid. It wasn't brought into the household, you know?
Yeah.
So it's almost like they got caught up in almost like the rat race of trying to exist in this country and not kind of be shunned for being different almost, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's that. I think it's also Christianity has gone in and erased and shamed a lot of cultural beliefs.
Sure.
A lot of cultural ties, a lot of different spiritual practices that have been, that has been even in with colonization. Like we rejected a lot of traditions, but almost like the spiritual stuff stayed.
Right.
And right. Like Dia de los Muertos, like that, like we fused a lot of stuff with Catholicism and we were able to maintain some of our traditions. But I think Christianity is different in the way that it shamed all of that. Like I grew up understanding that if you were Catholic, you weren't going to heaven because Catholics just went to confession and they absolve themselves. Sure. And so that wasn't a real Christian. That wasn't a true follower of God. Like, I think that was a brainwashing that my parents participated in because I was like, Mommy, how come you don't do this tradition? How come you don't practice this? And she would be like, no, it's of demonios.
Right. I mean, that was a tactic even like you're talking about the Europeans were using to convert people. You know what I mean? And man, there's so much history we can dive into, but I want to get back to the book. I mean, let's quickly kind of touch on For Brown Girls with Sharp Edges and Tender Hearts. What is the actual meaning behind the title of this book?
It's a lot of things. It's my homage to the fact that I have been influenced a lot by Black scholars, Black artists. Like my parents couldn't listen to secular music. That story, but I could listen to jazz because my dad was a musician and jazz was real music.
Right.
So I listened to Billie Holiday openly in my house. I listened to Irene Reed, Dinah Washington, Ella Fitzgerald, and those were all storytellers. Like I heard Strange Fruit. I was a junior in high school and I was rocked by Strange Fruit. I was like, what a haunting way to tell this story.
Right.
Oh my gosh. So Gloria Naylor is actually the inspiration for the cover. And it is my nod. It is me acknowledging that I am no one without all these Black scholars and Black thinkers and Black creative women specifically who have like shaped me. And so in Gloria Naylor's Women on Brewster Street, she has this quote. I read this book in grad school. Mm-hmm. She has this quote on page 5. That's how much I loved it. And she's talking about the women in this book. And she says they were hard-edged, soft-centered, brutally demanding, and easily pleased. And I think it's such a beautiful way of holding all the complexities of what it means to be obviously a Black woman in the U.S., but also just like not a white person in the United States. And specifically a woman of color.
Yeah, it's funny you're touching on something that I can relate to because I went to elementary school in the Bronx, and primarily you're talking Black kids and brown kids for the most part, but mostly Black. And I had a really, really, really strong, incredible Black woman as my teacher for kindergarten and first grade. And when Black History Month came along, we really were like ingrained in learning about those things. So for me, a lot of my heroes and figures that I looked up to were a lot of Black important figures, you know, the Martin Luther Kings of the world, obviously. And it's funny that we all, I think, Latin culture, I think without realizing, that's why we have such a close kinship to the African-American community, whether it be because we grew up, a lot of us, in the same communities. But also, those are kind of the only heroes that were publicly being spoken about that we were able to see that were at least somewhat relatable to what we experienced.
Yes. Exactly. Yes.
But once you start digging deeper, you start finding out about like the Young Lords and how they were marching right alongside the Black Panthers. But it's funny how their story is like almost never told. It's like this forgotten history once again. I mean, what do you kind of attribute to it? Because, I mean, we've had plenty of revolutionary figures throughout the course of our history, you know, as Latinos, but for whatever reason, they aren't spoken about in that same light.
I think because as non-Black Latinx, we are taught to overvalue whiteness. And so we don't honor anything that's deviant. We don't honor any rebellion. We are taught, like, be like white people. White people are awesome. They pay their bills. They pay back loans on time.
Right,
I've heard that growing up.
Sure.
You want to work with white people because they do things right, quote unquote.
Yeah, you want to live in a neighborhood with a lot of white people because that means it's, like, a nice neighborhood.
Yeah, right? So we have participated in our own silencing because we have been taught that being a respectable white person is the key. And so we value all those things and we have devalued. Like when I've heard of the Young Lords, when I understood the Young Lords, I was like, oh, I'm glad nobody told me this sooner because I know my mom would have been like, gangueros. Like, we don't need to talk about those gangueros.
Right.
And I'm like, I hate that I can't even have expected them to do better because there's a history of overvaluing whiteness and devaluing our rebellion, our revolutions, our anything that we go against whiteness is viewed as not safe, not good, not personally and career-wise.
Yeah, no, 100%. Whenever we stand up for ourselves or organize, we're called gangs, you know, while other people are called like political parties, you know what I mean, or whatever it might be. I love this perspective, this conversation. So I want to get back in the book though. But you talk about something that I feel like is incredibly common but not spoken about enough, and that's the idea of imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
And you going to a school like Vanderbilt, which obviously it doesn't have many people of color going to it. You know, that my girlfriend, I relate to this because we've had a conversation. She's in law school right now and she's one of a few women of color in her classes, and she goes through this feeling of sometimes like she doesn't belong there, not good enough, you know, those kinds of things. So let's kind of touch on this and kind of what you see the reasoning behind this is such a common thing for women of color specifically, because I think even as a male, we have a little bit more privilege. Even as a male, you know, of color, I still on the social totem pole am looked at a little bit higher, you know, but specifically this is a bit of a phenomenon when it comes to women of color. And why do you think so?
I think because of how we're socialized. My first husband, when my mom found out that he served his home plate, she was shocked. She was like, oh, míralo. it was like a fascination. The few times that I've been praised at home when I lived back at home were because I did laundry. I cleaned the bathroom without being asked. My room was clean. I could get on the dean's list every semester and that went unacknowledged every semester. But I did the dishes on Friday at 5 p.m.
Yeah.
And I was a mujer virtuosa. So I think it's the socialization. We are praised for certain things. We are not praised for other things. And then we enter elite spaces that aren't, you know, like the cooking championship. And it feels like you shouldn't be there. Like, it feels like everything that's happening good, you should just be humble about it. Nobody likes a woman that's smart and knows it.
Right. You'll never find a man if you're too smart or you make more money than him or something like that.
Yeah. I have been told a los hombres no les gustan las mujeres que leen. Men don't like women who read.
I've been
told that. So how do you not carry that to those spaces when you start hearing that messaging from whiteness? Because whiteness reinforces that.
Sure.
it's like the double-edged sword. Like, you felt it at home, and now mm-hmm. you're entering this space, and you feel it to a level that's systemic. It's not just right. your mommy praising you for strictly female, quote-unquote, duties. Mm-hmm. It's like everybody wondering, how did you even end up in this master's program? That's so right. neat.
Right. And they'll try and find excuses for why you are there. Or yeah. like, or you're labeled as, oh, wow, you're like one of the good ones then. You know what I mean? Like, I've yeah. heard things like that, you know, happen. Like, oh, wow, he's so well spoken. And it's yeah. like that. OK, so that there's obvious like stereotypes and racial undertones to what you're saying, that you're surprised that I can compose myself and articulate my thoughts in a way that's like acceptable to you. And it's just, it's funny how so much of that stuff is just allowed and swept under the rug and nobody really bats an eye about it, you know?
Yeah. And it's so... Like, where do you go when you hear something like that at your right. job?
Right.
Nowhere. Like, there right. is no protocol for it. I was mm-hmm. working at Neiman Marcus on the floor when my manager said, it was the outlet store in Dolphin Mall in Miami. And my manager said, he was a white man, a gay white man. Mm-hmm. And he said, you're so different than all the other, and they're all Latinas mm-hmm. on the floor. He said, you're so different than all of them. You're just so much smarter. Wow. And I couldn't, where do you go? Like,
right.
the manager just told me that. Like, where do right, I go right. from here?
Yeah, absolutely. If you don't have an HR person that's educated on like the undertones and the real meaning of that stuff, most people are going to brush, oh, but that's not a big deal. He was just complimenting you. You know, they
yeah.
don't understand
yeah.
how what this actually, what he's actually saying and how, you know, detrimental it is to your own confidence and your own identity.
Yeah, because you want to be in community with someone. And I didn't sure. want to be in community with this white manager.
Right, right.
So then I'm like, this makes me, you have now selected me as different. And so right. that has separated me from my people.
Right.
And right. unfortunately, I think a lot of us, because we are taught to overvalue whiteness, and mm-hmm. again, why we're not taught all our figures that we should know about, mm-hmm. a lot of us are like, yes, I did it. And mm-hmm. now I, too, can get a promotion because right. I'm different than them. And then I will nurture whoever's different than them, too.
Right.
And then
right,
we
right.
continue the same cycle without them even like they haven't even told us to become their soldiers for it.
Right.
We
right.
have now taken the responsibility to go ahead and perpetuate all that.
Right, right. Because we're like almost being tricked into taking pride with the fact that we are different, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just crazy. It really is just like a mind fuck, you know, that is just like purposely done, obviously. I mean, the last thing I want to ask you about that I found really fascinating was the conversation of internalized racism. So break that down a little bit.
It's There's a lot of ways to come at it. I don't know how sure. where to start, which right. part.
I mean, you talk about how you see yourself and your community more clearly, you know, and even I think how you see yourself in your own community, you know, because I think that I've struggled with this as well, where I think when I was younger, I was pushed away a little bit by like my cousins back home because they would call me a gringo because I didn't speak proper Spanish. You know what I mean? My Spanish was broken mm-hmm. and I was too Americanized for them, you know? So it almost felt like I didn't have a home, and it almost made me kind of revolt against my own culture, I think, to a degree in my mind, you know, that, okay, I'm going to be the furthest thing from you guys then if that's how you feel about me. So that's, I think, a good example of internalized racism that I've experienced in my life. So I think kind of if you want to touch on from that perspective.
I think for me, the way that I specifically wrote about it, it's I do look more indigenous. Mm-hmm. Like, I have tried to not. It's taken me years to accept it. I yeah. like bought turquoise contacts. Like, I tried. I thought right. you can alter your appearance.
Right.
And it never worked. And so the way that I experienced it in our communities, because I didn't leave our communities till I was in my late 20s. Mm-hmm. That's when I started grad school.
Right.
So I experienced like mejorar la raza comments. Mm. Like, I experienced get out of the sun comments.
Sure.
I experienced light skin Latinx dating me on dares from their friends.
Mm.
Like, all of that. It is so embedded that I even knew my first ex-husband. I knew that if I picked a white guy, they would be okay with it.
Wow.
And I wanted yeah. to get out of the house so bad that I picked sure. a white guy.
Right. Yeah.
So it's so insidious, and it's so, it's like, it's in everyday interactions. That's right. The thing that I've been talking about. Like, we are taught to overvalue whiteness. And mm-hmm. then the ways that that looks is that we undervalue brownness and blackness mm-hmm. at every right. turn.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we're oftentimes, like, whether it was by design by ourselves, but also obviously outside sources, we're told that there's only one way to be Latin, right? Like that. And it's yeah. ignoring just the beautiful, diverse history that Latinos have. You know, it's just this interesting thing. When we grow up, it's like, oh, sorry, there's only one way to be so. And if you don't fit into that box, sorry, like, you know, go off and find something else for yourself. And there's a lot of, like, self-hatred that ends up brewing, I feel like, because of that.
Yeah. Or even last names. I watched a video of a Guatemalan president in the 70s say his last name mm-hmm. for like 3 minutes. Like, he mm-hmm. was like, I forget what his name was, but he started, sure. let's say, Alfredo, mm-hmm. Manuel, Rodriguez, Alcaraz, mm-hmm. and like mm-hmm. just kept going and going for 3 minutes. And I remember being like, what's happening?
Yeah.
And the teacher said, oh, he's tracing his lineage to Spain.
Mm.
Like, he's making wow. sure that you know.
Yeah.
That he is of Spanish descent.
Right.
Like, that's fascinating. Why? Fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fascinating. And we've all internalized it. And that's yeah. why the Rosalía pick pisses me off.
Right. No, I mean, and that makes perfect sense. And honestly, what you're bringing up with me, with like, my last name is Ramos, but like, white people would say Ramos, and I wouldn't correct them for the longest time. You know what I mean? It was just kind of like, but now I take pride and be like, no, you have, like, this is how you properly pronounce it. I correct people. I yeah. properly pronounce, because there's something beautiful about rolling my R to say my last name. You know what I mean? But like, it took a long time for me to find that internal, like, love for myself and where I come from, you know? And
yeah.
I mean, obviously so many of us struggle with that, being in a world that really kind of makes us feel lesser than.
Yeah. Yeah. And I hope that a book like this mm-hmm. gives people just courage.
Right.
Courage to do whatever it means. Because as a people, we have been told what to do mm-hmm. for far too long.
Right.
So if you read a book like this and you decide to do this minor tweak in the way that you address a room of people and mm-hmm. you say Latinx
yeah.
instead of Latino, then I think that that's a win.
Right,
but you
right.
have to start somewhere. Just disrupt Absolutely. The expectations.
No, I love that. I love that. And it's all about growth. I think we're all learning and we're all kind of correcting past mistakes, past trauma, all of the above. And these new ideas, or ideas that are new to us, aren't necessarily wrong because we've never heard them before. We have to accept that a lot of it is a part of growth and correcting yeah. the mistakes of previous generations. And that's okay, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Which I love. Okay, so I mean, listen, I appreciate the conversation. I love yes. everything we're talking about. I could talk to you for like another 4 hours about this, but where can people follow you? I know the book is out everywhere right now. Where can people follow you on social media if they want to keep up with everything you're doing?
Yeah, I'm at Prisca Dorcas everywhere. So just look for it. I think I'm the real Prisca Dorcas on TikTok, but honestly, don't even bother because I am old. I'm an older millennial and I'm embarrassed that I'm even on the app.
Yeah.
But here we are.
Yeah, same. I'm embarrassed when I log on to TikTok and I see that people have found me on there, because it's just not,
I know.
It's not quality. You know, I haven't cracked that one yet. I think I might be a little bit too old for it, but it's okay. Well, listen, please, guys, it's been amazing getting to meet you, and thanks again for hopping on the show. Hopefully we can get to do this again sometime.
Likewise.
That was a lot of fun talking to Prisca. Make sure you go check out her book. Again, it's out everywhere right now, 4 Brown Girls with Sharp Edges and Tender Hearts. I've been seeing it pop up all over my Instagram from various people, so definitely make sure you go check that out. And now let's hear from y'all, my fellow gringos, in a segment that we call Ask a Gringo. Before that, though, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Ask a Gringo.
All right, so for this segment, I kind of wanted to continue on this whole Hispanic versus Latinx versus Latino conversation, because it literally just keeps on going. I feel like everywhere I look, I'm seeing a debate. And I had some people coming at me from last week when I was talking about Latinx Heritage Month. Obviously, Prisca and myself had a conversation about it again to get her point of view. So I thought it would only be right to ask y'all what you felt on this. And I got a couple of really good responses on here. @_madebyErica said, I don't care. I just need to know which one it is to not piss people off. A very fair and a very honest response. I think that was generally when I originally kind of started hearing this debate. That was generally my thought process. But I mean, obviously, as you dive deeper into some of the history and like meaning behind a lot of these different things, it does. I don't know. I guess the importance of it definitely rises. I mean, and then hearing kind of Priska talk about, you know, the reasons why it is so important to kind of really, you know, use things properly, and her own conversations and her own, you know, kind of findings that she's had that have opened her eyes to it. I think it definitely inspires me to kind of want to do better and make a more, you know, make a bigger effort towards kind of saying things correctly and not just kind of brushing it off as, oh, well, it's not that important. Because that's really kind of, to be honest, how I kind of looked at it before was like, well, does it really matter? But nah, I think there definitely is something to it, and to brush it off would kind of be doing a disservice to our own culture. So definitely from here on out, I'm going to do my best to replace my language with using Latinx. At Melanie period Bella says Hispanic or Latina parentheses Latina for sure. The language is said slash written in masculine and feminine. And I mean, listen, yeah, if you're going strictly when it comes to like the way the language is written in Spanish, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. But I think what the bigger discussion that we're having here when it comes to this is kind of this idea of the importance that is placed in Latin culture of men, right? Like the idea, we've all heard it, like machismo, you know what I mean? And this idea that like men could do no wrong, and it really has led to a culture where, unfortunately, a lot of women in the Latin community didn't grow up having their own voice or having their own value outside of being, you know, somebody's wife, right? Or being a mother. And I guess that's what's being pointed to when you talk about this. And that's what a lot of people argue is the importance of this, you know, by taking away kind of the masculine and the feminine when it comes to the language. You're hopefully kind of rewriting a little bit of this machismo kind of hierarchy. Because if you also think about it, like the like go-to when you're talking about, like, if you're describing all Latin people, they would say Latinos, right? They don't say Latinas and blanket in men, but they say Latinos and they blanket in women underneath that as well, if you're talking about like a group of people. So it's this idea that the masculine is always going to be above the feminine. I think that's what people are trying to tackle when they talk about this. And when you break it down in that point, I mean, shit, it does make sense. We've created a bit of a toxic culture where men have historically reigned supreme, and there definitely needs to be a correction in that. Let's see. And the last one was from at Ms. Soria 90. She says, Hispanic is just fine. I understand the importance of inclusivity, but Hispanic isn't offending anyone. And yeah, I think that you're right. I don't think it's necessarily offending anybody. Like, Hispanic isn't a derogatory term, you know what I mean? So you're right in that sense. I guess, I mean, and this is something we talked about in the interview. I talked about in the last Latinx Heritage Month episode that we did last week. But I think it's just understanding where the word Hispanic comes from. And I think understanding that, you know, as a culture, you know, we were an oppressed people, right? Like, we were looked at as lesser than. And the idea that rubs people the wrong way is the fact that we're going along with a name that was given to us essentially by our abusers, you know what I mean? By our oppressors. And I think that's where the obvious controversy comes from all of that. And not to call anybody out who's participating in this conversation, because I appreciate all y'all, but I do wonder why there is so much pushback to this idea of like Latinx. You know, like, when I heard it, I really personally didn't have an issue with it, you know, like, I mean, like I said before, I didn't think that we necessarily needed to like banish one for the other until I really started to kind of deep dive into and educate myself. But I guess it really is just like the idea of human nature, right? As humans, we are always going to push against change and find an excuse for why change is wrong, why something different is wrong. And let me continue that thought as we get into conclusions too, because I kind of feel like I'm getting onto a bit of what like the summary of all this would be. So we'll get into that. And thank y'all so much who participated in the Ask a Gringo segment at the DJ Dramos on Instagram. If you want to be a part of any future conversations, I do this for each and every episode. I post questions in my story. So if y'all want to be a part of the podcast, you can do that there. And now let's kind of tie everything we've learned up into a neat little bow in a segment we call Conclusion Stew.
Time for Conclusion Stew.
Okay, so I mean, I think for me, the biggest takeaway that I have from all of this, whether it be the conversation with Priska, my own kind of deep diving that I'm doing, I mean, it's just last couple of weeks of really kind of inundating myself and everything and really just having an open mind and an open ear. My takeaway is that we just can't be afraid of progression. Like our culture has achieved so many amazing and incredible things, but we've also been our own worst enemy at times, whether holding on to these old religious ideals that don't allow us to open our minds and expose ourselves to new and different ideas that potentially could help us grow as a culture, you know, to old traditions that really no longer serve us. I mean, even talking about this machismo culture, you know, even Priska mentioning how, like, the only time that she was viewed as valuable by her own family was when she was cleaning up the house or doing the dishes or cooking, whatever it was. You know, meanwhile, she's, like, doing great grades in school, going to amazing colleges like Vanderbilt University, but she's not being celebrated for those things. You know, I mean, that's obviously an issue in our culture that we need to correct. And then obviously when it comes to these different terms, like how we want to refer to ourselves, I mean, we're just like finding new ways to argue with one another. And I think that that's sort of the biggest story when it comes to our culture. Anything new, anything different, we sort of fight against it. You know, we don't embrace it and we kind of just try and shield ourselves from it. And it's just something to keep in mind. I'm not here to tell you how to live your life. And again, like we had kind of mentioned the Ask a Gringo segment, I mean, it's not necessarily, as far as I know, I mean, somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, as far as I feel personally, there's nothing, you know, offensive about the word Hispanic. It's just not the ideal, you know, way we want to describe ourselves because it's how somebody else decided that we were going to, you know, designated in this country. But I do think that stuff like this, and when you see these arguments happening online and just how passionate people get about it and how they want to pick a side, it does explain why we don't have the sort of representation in places like media when, you know, something really bad happens to a member of our community, you know, or we don't have like the front-facing social justice advocates that like everybody knows who they are, you know, when something happens in this country. We don't do well at organizing and supporting one another, right? We would rather compare and contrast one another, why we are not the same, you know what I mean? Or why we refer to ourselves differently or whatever it is. Like, I feel like we constantly try and find ways to like separate ourselves from each other and like create this caste system within our own culture. And then it's just a detriment to ourselves at the end of the day, right? Like, you know, you go from even the idea of like colorism and that's what this whole episode is essentially about, right? Like this idea that overvaluing whiteness not only just like trying to get in good with like white people in this country, but also trying to whiten ourselves. Like rather than trying to sit here and find a way to say why we're different or why one of us is better than the other, like we all just have to come together on, at the very least, the common denominator is that in this country, for any racist in this country, they are not going to ask you whether you are Mexican or Puerto Rican before they commit some sort of act of violence or decide to hate you just for simply existing. And that's something we need to understand. Like, we need to be better at organizing and getting behind one another. When something happens to one of us, it should happen to all of us, and that's how we should treat it. We shouldn't stay quiet. When we see these stories of like outrage at the border when it comes to my brothers and sisters, we should be outraged as Puerto Ricans. Like, these are just examples I'm just saying, and I'm kind of like going off on a bit of a wide blanket thing, but we should just be celebrating one another, and we should also be celebrating ourselves. Like, it's 2021. This idea that we have to be white or like sneak ourselves into white culture to find success, happiness, and acceptance in this country, in this world, like, that's a prehistoric notion. And that's what I mean about these old ideals. Like, listen, we are on the path to quickly becoming the majority in this country. The days of us having to assimilate into white culture are gone. We could sit here, we could be proud, we could be celebrating our culture, and there's not a damn thing anybody can do about it because we have an audience now. Like, we have a voice, and we just need to get better at organizing and get better at celebrating that voice. And that's all I'm saying when it comes to all this kind of stuff and this whole conversation. And I hope that it maybe opened up some people's minds and kind of pointed out some things that they have been blind to, you know? I mean, shit, last thing I'll remind you of is look at our Spanish television stations. Who is being celebrated up there? It's all white-looking Latinos, you know what I mean? Like, that's who's being celebrated on there. If that doesn't tell you what people's idea of, like, the ideal representation of our culture is, like, I don't know what else to kind of bring up to you, you know? We just have to do better, and we just have to be there to support one another and really get behind one another. I know it's difficult because, you know, our cultures, while they share a lot of similarities, there also is sort of drastic differences and different needs for different cultures. But at the end of the day, like, we all need to be in this together. And that means backing one another up and also being there loud and proud and being unafraid to celebrate our culture and live our life as proud Latinx in this country. And I hope I use that properly because y'all know my Spanish is trash, but I'm trying to get better at the phrasing over here. Call me out if I fuck that one up. Now, with that said, man, thank you all so much for tuning into today's episode. Again, please, if you listen to this on Apple Podcasts, I'm gonna do a giveaway with this. Give us 5 stars and leave a positive review. Screenshot it and then DM it to me on Instagram. I'm gonna pick a couple people. I'm gonna send y'all some free merch for doing that. So do that. Leave a nice little comment for me. I would greatly appreciate it on Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review. And with that said, another Latinx Heritage Month episode in the books. I'll be back with a brand new episode of the podcast on Tuesday. Until then, have a great weekend. I'll talk to y'all then. Peace. Life as a Gringo is a production of the Michael Tura Podcast Network and iHeartRadio.